term, the war on drugs, has been around since the early 1970s. It was coined by the media after then-President Richard Nixon declared that drug abuse was public enemy number one.
But despite decades of policy efforts and billions of dollars spent on the issue, few would argue that it's been a complete success. And critics say there have been many unintended consequences that have hurt individuals, families, communities, and the nation as a whole.
Bill Bogart has studied several types of behavior that governments would like to eliminate or reduce. In his new book, Off the Street, Legalizing Drugs, he argues that it's time to try an approach of permit but discourage with currently illegal drugs. Bill Bogart is distinguished university professor and professor of law at the University of Windsor in Canada, and he joins us now. Bill, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks so much for having me on.
So, Bill, you're based in Canada, but you've looked extensively at the war on drugs on both sides of the border. What have been the main components of the American and Canadian approaches?
Well, the main approach of the war on drug was an attempt to suppress a substance use. And we know from the statistics that that goal has not been successful, and indeed, in terms of some drugs, usage has actually increased during the period of the war on drugs. And beyond that, the war has really imposed significant collateral costs, such as the putting people in jail only for the only reason that they've used a substance. An illicit market that is run by the lawless who sell tainted substances that make people sick or even kill them, governments being deprived of a revenue stream from an industry, and it is an industry, and children being exploited in terrible ways. So I think in sum, the goal has not been accomplished, and in addition, the war has really generated these very negative consequences.
You mentioned the term collateral damage, and in September, rapper Jay-Z created a video op-ed piece, actually, on why the war on drugs has been a failure and some of its impacts. Here's a clip of that.
In 1986, when I was coming of age, Ronald Reagan doubled down on the war on drugs that had been started by Richard Nixon in 1971. Drugs were bad, fried your brain, and drug dealers were monsters, the sole reason neighborhoods and major cities were failing. No one wanted to talk about Reaganomics and the ending of social safety nets, the defunding of schools and the loss of jobs in cities across America. Young men like me who hustled became the sole villain, and drug addicts lacked moral fortitude. In the 1990s, incarceration rates in the U.S. blew up. Today, we imprison more people than any other country in the world.
So, Bill Bogart, does what Jay-Z was saying there ring true to you?
Yeah, in large part, it does, I'm afraid. The war on drugs has deflected us from all other, so many other kinds of social ills. The situation in the United States is complicated, and in part because of the election of Donald Trump, and we really don't know what his attitude to war on drugs will be. We've had signals that he thinks the solution is to legalize drugs. On the other hand, he's appointed Jeff Sessions, who says that good people don't smoke marijuana. So, we'll just have to see what happens. But I can tell you in Canada, marijuana is on the eve of, recreational marijuana is on the eve of legalization. Our Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau, who you and your listeners may have heard of, he's young and has kind of something of an international profile, campaigned on a promise to legalize and regulate recreational marijuana, and medicinal marijuana has been legal for about 15 years. But beyond that, we have a terrible opioid crisis, and I believe that in the United States, at least some of the states also have this crisis.
And we're certainly dealing with that here in Wisconsin.
Yeah, and I can tell you that you know, the silver lining in that very, very dark cloud, and it is very dark indeed, is that Canada is by and large taking a public health approach to the opioid crisis. We're handing out naloxone, which is, as you know, an opioid inhibitor. We're passing Safe Samaritan laws so that people who are involved in drug usage, if somebody overdoses and they call 911, they will not be prosecuted. We are opening up safe injection sites. We've had a safe injection site in Vancouver for some years, but we're opening up others. And, you know, we're doing that so that there will be a harbor where people can come and they would be otherwise committing a criminal act, the usage of intravenous drugs. But we want them to have a harbor so that they will not get these terrible infections from dirty needles. They will not overdose, and they will not consume tainted substances because the drugs are tested before they use them. And I can also tell you that public opinion is shifting. There's just a poll out today of people in BC, and
British Columbia.
A majority of them now are willing to contemplate steps to legalize and regulate all drugs, not just marijuana.
So, Bill, you've looked at other behaviors that governments have an interest in discouraging, like gambling and smoking, and health habits that can lead to public health crises like obesity. What type of approach is most often taken in those cases?
Well, it really is the approach of permit but discourage, which has become kind of a mantra for me as I approach these things. I mean, what we do is we roll back the criminal law, and you know, you and your listeners will remember that there was a period of prohibition of alcohol in the United States and in Canada too, although we never constitutionalized it like you folks did. And gambling was a criminal activity in Canada until the late 60s. So in both those instances, we moved from a paradigm of criminalization to one of legalization and regulation, where we don't make criminals of people who, you know, drink alcohol or engage in gambling, but we do discourage harmful behavior through a range of regulatory mechanisms. And we've certainly done that with smoking. Smoking was never criminalized, but for the last four decades, we've, both in Canada and the United States, have invoked regulatory measures to discourage smoking of any kind, because there's no safe level of smoking. And, you know, that is a public health success story. Our smoking rates amongst adults on both sides of the borders four decades ago were approaching 50%. Now they're in the teens, and there's evidence that they're falling further. And even better news for kids, at least in Canada, but I think the statistics are roughly similar in the United States. We've got smoking amongst adolescents down to single digits. And that's a real success story, because if you don't start smoking before about the age of 20, you're very unlikely to develop a lifelong habit of smoking. So the next generation of Canadians, and hopefully Americans as well, will contain very few people who smoke.
So the permit but discourage approach has worked with smoking. It sounds like it's certainly moved us in the right direction. Have you seen other measures of effectiveness in things like you mentioned gambling and some of those health habits that surround obesity?
Well, I mean, you know, gambling, again, this is the stats for Canada, but I think the United States is about the same. We've got a problem gambling with impaired people with impaired control down to about 3% of those who gamble. So that translates into roughly 1.5% of the adult population. So the numbers are very low. Now, however, I'm not minimizing problems associated with problem gambling. You know, somebody with impaired control can cause enormous consequences to themselves, their family, the community, their employers, etc. So I would never minimize issues associated with harmful behavior. But with problem gambling, we're down to about, as I said, 3% of those who gamble. And, you know, I think the really new frontier other than recreational drugs is non-nutritious food. Mm-hmm. And you can see the movement arising to really engage this sort of permit but discouraged approach, where we're not outlawing pop or sugary cereals, but we are moving to regulatory interventions such as junk food taxes in an attempt to drive down the rates of harmful consumption. And while we're doing that, and this would also have applied to smoking, which is a very important point, we're really trying to shift norms. Smoking in the last four decades has moved from this sort of glamorous, sophisticated activity to one that is largely seen as a dirty and expensive habit. And with non-nutritious eating, we're really trying to move the goalposts in terms of public attitudes and behavior towards non-nutritious food. Now, it's an incredible battle, but you know that the approach is certainly permit but discourage.
We're talking right now with Bill Bogart about his most recent book titled Off the Street, Legalizing Drugs. He's a distinguished university professor and professor of law at the University of Windsor in Canada.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. How would you assess the success or failure of the war on drugs? And what do you think about the idea we'll be getting into, the idea that this permit but discourage approach should be applied to drugs? Legalized, permit their use, but discourage. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We're continuing our conversation with Bill Bogart about his most recent book, Off the Street, Legalizing Drugs. He says that the war on drugs has failed and that it's time to try a policy of permit but discourage instead.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. Would you support legalizing drugs across the board in an effort to better support addicts and lessen the cost to society of criminalization and prisons? Call in now, 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
So, Bill, let's get into the nuts and bolts of this. If we were to go with this new approach, get rid of the war on drugs, reduce the criminalization significantly, and permit drug use across the board, but discourage its use at the same time, how would that look? How would that be implemented?
Well, that's a very good question. The book uses words like cautiously and carefully repeatedly. So the proposition here is that, you know, we don't start selling heroin on street corners next month by any means. It would be an incremental approach. We would start off with marijuana because many jurisdictions are doing that. And legalize and regulate both medical marijuana, and as I said, we've done that in Canada for about 15 years, and recreational marijuana, and we'd learn from that about what legalization and regulation of a previously illegal substance looks like. And while we're doing that, I would say that our first priority must be the protection of children, because, you know, we don't want kids using drugs, and we don't have a particularly good track record of preventing kids at risk from using drugs in a criminal paradigm. But as we move to legalization and regulation, protecting kids would be the first priority. Then we could do a number of steps. So, for example, with the safe injection sites, at least in Canada, people still have to bring their own drugs, and that leaves them open to bringing tainted substances, etc. Now, those tainted substances are intercepted at the safe injection sites because they are tested. But the fact of the matter is, the whole situation would be far better off if we had, for example, medical-grade heroin available at the safe injection sites. But to do that, we'd have to travel farther down the legalization and regulation route.
And I want to make sure we can get to some of our callers here at 800-642-1234. And Mary in Milwaukee is up first. Hi, Mary.
Hello. Well, I agree with him. We definitely need to do something to change our system. It's not working. And I think our war on drugs has actually become a war on humanity.
Thanks for that call, Mary. And Bill?
Mary couldn't have said it better. I think, though, that the book it tries to move through this this whole problem very carefully, as I said, very carefully and very cautiously. And I don't have to get to Mary because Mary's already convinced. The book is aimed more at people who at least would contemplate another approach other than continuing the war on drugs and doubling down, et cetera, et cetera. And to do that, I try to go through the evidence and studies very, very carefully.
Let's go back to the phones, and John in Madison joins us. Hi, John.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
Hi, Bill.
Hi.
Go ahead, John.
Oh, I just wanted to say I agree with what you have to say there. A few things. One comment, I work with an emergency system, and I can tell you I've seen a number of people, and it's a constant battle all the time, and don't see it going away, and I'd rather see something there where it's regulated in a manner that it's safer for people in the street instead of things that go out that cause with the overdoses, and again, see it a lot. The other thing would be, and this would just be on the regulatory mechanism, I would suggest that the taxes they raise, just so they can see track better for sin taxes, if you will, like for alcohol, tobacco, or just for mm-hmm. other drugs that are legalized, that they don't go into a general fund, but they go specifically to a program such as for addiction treatment.
Thanks for that, John. I want to make sure Bill can respond. So John actually used the phrase get it off the street, and that's actually the name of your book, Bill, Off the Street,
yeah.
Legalizing Drugs. So what does that particular phrase, off the street, mean to you? I mean, you talked about those safe places for people to use drugs, but are there other elements to that?
Well, I think it's off the street in two senses. Off the street in the sense of get people who have become dependent on drugs. And, you know, not all people who use drugs become dependent, but for those who do, it can be a pretty miserable existence. And let's not condemn them to the streets, but let's get them help. And then the second meaning of off the streets is let's take this whole enterprise away from the lawless. We're allowing an industry to be run by the underground, and we have to confront these people, and the way to confront them is to take the market away from them. But the other point that was made here that I would like to comment on was let's not let the tax revenues fall into the general mm-hmm. coffers, but use them for prevention, protection of kids, treatment, and I entirely agree with that. I advocate that in the book. And I advocate that in the book for two reasons, not only for prevention, treatment, protection of kids, but if you look at people's views of these things, people will support taxes on commodities if they are told that those taxes will go to prevention or treatment or prevention of misuse. So, for example, soda taxes, we know that's the case. Like if people are told, look, the additional taxes on soda will go to fight obesity, to promote more nutritious eating, people are much more likely to support those taxes.
And kind of piggybacking on that, we had a comment from Troy from Northwestern Wisconsin, who's a recovering addict, and he says getting into a methadone treatment clinic was really important for him. He's really grateful he could do it. It's costly, and sometimes parents or the addicts themselves aren't able to do it. So it sounds like that's another reason to argue for the money being plowed back into treatment instead of a general fund.
Yes, that's true. Now, of course, we're different in Canada than you folks in the United States because, as you know, we have universal health care.
Right.
Which is not a perfect system. I don't want to suggest that it is, but that sort of treatment, if it's approved, would be paid for by the government. But the general point that's being made is certainly an excellent one. I mean, if we believe that we want to permit but discourage, I mean, one of the ways to discourage harmful use is to get people help and support them so they can move away from these harmful drugs.
And Bill, in just the 30 seconds or so we have left, I'm sure there are some people that would say, well, marijuana is one thing, but, you know, if we legalize all types of drugs, even with this permit but discourage approach, you know, once the horse is out of the barn and if it doesn't work or if there are bad consequences, there's no going back. Quickly, what would you say to encourage them to give this approach a try?
Well, we're back to the words cautious, careful, and incremental. I don't support the notion that we'd start selling heroin on street corners tomorrow. We would do this incrementally. For example, more safe injection sites that provide medical grade heroin. Looking at the Portugal experiment, where drugs have been decriminalized but not legalized and regulated. So there are all sorts of step-by-step approaches that we can take and assess those consequences as we go along.
Well, Bill, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks so much for the opportunity of being on your program.
Bill Bogart is Distinguished University Professor and Professor of Law at the University of Windsor in Canada. He joined us to talk about his most recent book, Off the Street, Legalized Drugs. You can keep the conversation going on the Central Time Facebook page. We'd love to hear what you think.